Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. And today we have a wonderful guest talking about something that you may not have thought about, the postnatal depletion cure, a complete guide to rebuilding your health, reclaiming your energy for mothers of newborns, toddlers, and young children. Dr. Oscar Sarawak, you can think of Sarah and Lack and put it together. It's spelled differently, and we'll come back to that in a second, is our guest today. We want to thank you for downloading us. Tell your friends about us. 50,000 of you download us weekly. Can't all be wrong. So thanks very much for downloading us. And again, this is the B segment. So thanks very much. Dr. Sarawak, how did you happen to come to the idea of a postnatal depletion syndrome?
Well, just through my sort of personal observations as a father and also as a doctor working in a community with lots of mothers with young children. And I did my sort of family medical residence. So I was a family doctor, started my family, and I was studying functional medicine at the time of my first sort of child. And so I was learning a lot about nutrients and hormones and gut health at a time where I was sort of having children. And my personal story is I've got three children, and my partner, Caroline, just started to become more fatigued and more had problems with her concentration and memory and hypervigilance with sort of each child. So
it got worse with each, it got worse and more severe depletion with each child then.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't happen with the first child. It happens with progressive pregnancies, but there's quite a toll on the body, you can imagine, physically, with all the nutrients that are required to make a baby, birth a baby, breastfeed a baby. You superimpose sleep deprivation. The average mother loses 700 hours of sleep in the first year after having a child. That's the average mother. And all that takes a big toll on the body. And if you have children very close together, that there's a real negative synergy that it can occur for a mother's sort of well-being.
So this started as a personal event when your wife or partner got more what you would call depleted after each child, and after the third child, as I understand it, she was pretty exhausted.
You're pretty exhausted, and I just had severe memory issues and concentration, and this this thing around hypervigilance and easily triggered into overwhelm. And this is a real pattern that you see with mothers with postnatal depletion, that there's almost like a fingerprint that of biochemical things and also just of physical and emotional mental symptoms that happen with that. And so I'm fairly early in terms of the science regarding this, but I definitely want to be gathering a lot more information. I'm teaming up with people from around the world to sort of explore this more. And one of the things I'm really fascinated by is the idea of matrescence, and I'll explain that a little bit to you. So the word matrescence is the transformation from a pre-mother to a mother. It's a little bit like adolescence. Everyone knows adolescence. We've been through it. It's a big time of transformation to go from a child to an adult, and there are physical changes to the brain, there's lots of changes to the body, and sort of an upgrade in the adolescent's sort of thinking in a new sort of world perspective, if you like. It's all mediated through hormones. Matrescence is a very similar idea. Now, it's probably as profound, if not more profound, than what happens during adolescence. And the placenta creates 200 different hormones for the mother and for the baby. And, the mother is literally marinated in a whole sea of hormones. Estrogen levels go up 30 times above baseline in the third trimester. Progesterone goes up 10 times. Cortisol goes up 3 times above baseline. And so all these hormones have a major change in a woman's body, including her brain. And not many doctors know that the highest time of neurogenesis that a human can experience outside of being a fetus is during the third trimester of a pregnancy. So all these new neurons are getting laid down, and
And you're talking about neurons in the mother, not in the child or fetus.
Yeah, in the mother, exactly. You know, the fetus is having a huge amount of neurogenesis, obviously, but the mother is also, and there's very limited research on this.
We ought to explain to our listeners what neurogenesis is. That means making more parts of your brain.
Yeah, more neurons. So it's literally like a hardware upgrade to the brain, if you like. But this is also part of why a lot of mothers are easily sort of triggered into overwhelm. It's also potentially why mothers get hyperemesis or nausea with pregnancy, changes in their smell perception, these unusual cravings that mothers sometimes experience. You know, some of that is explained through these extra neurons that are laid on in the brain. And also, the motivation center in the hypothalamus, the central part of the brain, lots of new neurons there. So mothers can have lots of different levels of improvements in their sort of mental function. But it can be quite confusing for a mother if she doesn't understand this. This is why I use the term matrescence to sort of, allude to sort of adolescence as a time of turmoil, but eventually, you get to a much better place. And so there can be a lot of confusion for mothers around their role and around how they're feeling about the world, and also about if you're finding your concentration and memory isn't very good and you're in a state of hypervigilance, it can be a time of a lot of stress for a mother. And if you've superimposed fatigue on top of that, one of the other interesting things that I find postnatally and as part of the postnatal depletion syndrome is medical illnesses are often triggered after the birth of a child, or medical illnesses can be worsened after the birth of a child. And so there's something called the immune rebound hypothesis. So obviously the mother has to change her immune system to allow something that's slightly foreign to sort of grow inside of her, the baby. And after the baby's born, the placenta is delivered, the immune system can sometimes rebound, and this is why there seems to be an increased rate of autoimmune disease, such as Hashimoto's thyroiditis, a common sort of thyroid condition that mothers experience, or even increases in sort of psoriasis, other skin conditions after pregnancy. And it's not necessarily caused by the pregnancy, but it's very much a trigger. And
now, so, why is this coming up now? What's different about it in 2018 versus 1980 or 1960? And mothers had bigger families then, and presumably just as close together children. Why now versus 1960?
Well, that's a great question, Michael, and I'll try to answer that sort of simply. So I think one of the factors is mothers are older. So, the average age for a first-time mother in Australia is 30.9, and I think in America it's about 25 to 26 years. So we're having older mothers, so they're already perhaps in a pre-depleted state going into motherhood. I think there are a lot more stressors in our current environment, including chemical toxins in our food and in our cosmetics, but also just the 24/7 nature of things like social media, the expectations of parenthood. There's not a lot of downtime. I think that has its consequences. And I think also our food is a lot less in nutrients than it used to be back in the 1960s. And a lot of studies are showing nutrient content in our food and in our soils is progressively sort of getting less. So I think it's a combination of things. And I think there are also a lot of mothers in the 1960s that would have had issues that weren't really recognized. I have a lot of my clients, their mothers are sort of talking to me and just at least going, at least I had these sort of issues.
Now, let me go and explore this a little further, because presumably we're getting more prenatal vitamin usage or a higher percentage. And I presume that's true in Australia and New Zealand as it is in the United States. We should say the book we're talking about is The Prenatal Depletion Cure. It's a Goop, G-O-O-P, press book That's actually a division of Hatchett and Central Grand, Grand Central Life and Style. The postnatal depletion cure, a complete guide to rebuilding your health and reclaiming your energy, is by Dr. Oscar Serallach, Serallach. So two R's, two L's. And OscarSerallach.com is the website to go to. But presumably we had as good, at least, multivitamins in the old days, in the new days, as we had in the old days. So would that, is this part of real food is probably better than pills for nutrition and for example, providing DHA, as you mentioned strongly, or vitamin D, as you talk about in the book?
Mm. Yeah, so a lot of the prenatal supplements are essentially about disease prevention. So they've got, you know, adequate amounts of iodine and folate, to prevent sort of, you know, non-developmental issues. But they tend to be very low in, or just have small amounts of, you know, zinc, iron, magnesium, often don't have any fat-soluble nutrients, including the very important DHA, which is an omega 3 that's found in algae, and it's also found in fish. You know, you don't find this in plants apart from algae. And what's interesting is that during, coming back to what I was saying about during pregnancy, you know, a mother's brain will shrink 5% during pregnancy. You know, it's losing DHA to feed the baby's brain, but we're getting all these extra neurons. So a big part of the replenishment is making sure that a mother gets enough DHA during pregnancy and afterwards. And you don't typically find that in prenatals. And obviously the best source is food. So I really encourage my mothers to have, you know, lots of smaller oily fish as part of their recovery, or to have supplements if they're not able to get good quality fish.
And so in the postnatal depletion cure, you go through the regimen and symptoms that cause that regimen for mothers who have developed depletion. I think one of the things that I gained strongly from the book, which is written with a wonderful style, by the way, is one of the things I gained it was the recognition that there can be a, quote, delayed depletion syndrome. That is, it doesn't have to occur soon after birth, but could occur, as I think in the case of you and your partner, a longer period afterwards. And you describe other women where this can occur 3 or 6 months later. Did I get that right in the book, or is that a mistake I made?
Yeah. No, that's definitely correct. And it's, you know, it can be with subsequent pregnancy, or it can occur months, if not years later. And this is, I think part of what happens is that a woman can just get, you know, you can imagine, especially with things like sleep deprivation and ongoing stress and overwhelm, a person can only manage that for so long before they get, you know, deeply affected by that. An interesting study came out a few years ago from Australia, published in the BMJ, looking at depression postpartum, and that they realized the peak of depression postpartum was at 4 to 5 years after the birth of a child, but they couldn't call it postpartum depression because that can only occur in the first 6 months, and so they had to call it depression occurring postpartum. So it may be a different issue than what occurs in those first few months, but there must be an accumulation or a legacy for that to sort of be the peak time of actually experiencing depression after the birth of a child. And so it's a multifactorial issue. It's not just nutrients and DHA and hormones. And I think there's also sort of a social context of mothers trying to sort of do everything. There's a sleep aspect to it as well. And then there's, you know, as you sort of alluded to, there's not necessarily a recognition in society that mothers need a lot of support. If you go back to the 1960s before, you know, that we had societies where there was a lot more support for mothers to be able to recover from, the ordeals of childbirth and breastfeeding. And so they were able to have many more pregnancies without necessarily the negative aspects of depletion. Sort of.
So one of the things I should say that you go into very well in the book is the use of social support and of, I guess it would be historically called tribal support for births and sharing the both joys and responsibilities of a newborn that was present in past years or past decades, I guess, or past centuries, that isn't as present today with the isolation and more mother is solely responsible. The book is called The
Yeah, and that isolation comes at a big price, I think. And no, you're right. One of the things that I studied a lot in the research for the book was these postpartum practices. You know, what did old cultures do to help with recovery of mothers? Because I was curious whether this postnatal depletion was something that's been occurring for a long time or a more recent sort of thing. And you know, these old cultures, doesn't matter where you go, to Asia or to Native American tribes or to a lot of the early sort of European tribes, you know, they have a very important time in the first 4 to 6 weeks after the birth of a child where the mother's not allowed to do very much at all apart from breastfeed the baby and go to the toilet, essentially. You know, they're often not allowed to leave the hut or the house. A lot of cultures, that they're not even allowed to see the sun for that first sort of few weeks. You know, they have to just be very still and just to allow this hormonal and physical recovery to occur. In our society, we don't even have a discussion around that. So, and mothers are often back to work very early, or they're out and about with their young one within that first, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. Some mothers are okay with that, but for other mothers, that can be really sort of trigger them into a depleted state.
I'm curious, and I ask all the authors from foreign lands this question. We in America have chosen to eat our biggest meals at dinner time. And you obviously don't see that with babies. Obviously, they eat regularly and around the clock. When I've been to Australia and New Zealand, it seems to me either we've adopted your practice or you've adopted ours in eating the biggest meals in the evening as opposed to Europe, which still has a bigger meal at different times of day, depending on the country. Is that true? Is Australia, and you, since you did medical school in New Zealand, is that true of Australia and New Zealand, the biggest meals are in the evening?
Yeah, and then people often will, pass over breakfast or lunch or have quite light meals. Then, I come from a Spanish background. I was born in Spain and grew up in New Zealand. So, I'm very aware of the European having the large meal in the middle of the day and then, the siesta culture that sort of goes with that. And it's interesting. I think every person's a little bit different, but I think having a very large meal just before you go to sleep doesn't suit a lot of people, but culturally that's what they're sort of used to.
I didn't see that discussed in the book. Obviously, it's a weird question I ask, so I understand it's not in the book, but do you think that plays a role in it? In other words, are the cultures where the bigger meal is in the middle of the day less likely to have this depletion problem postnatally, or do you think that's independent of that time of meal?
Oh, no, I think it's a very valid factor. I don't think it's something that's been very well studied. So I try to keep to more where the science is at in the book, but it's something that I'm very curious about, the volume of the meal, the composition of the meal, those kind of things. But it's also those cultures where you eat more at midday, there tends to be more living within extended families as well. So there, there tends to be more social support. So that would be a confounding factor. But it's a really interesting thought as well, spreading out the nutrition during the day rather than having it at the end of the day. So, it's something I'd definitely like to know more about.
Well, I'd like to know more about it, and we will. And you will know more about postnatal depletion and the cure for it if you get The Postnatal Depletion Cure, a book by Grand Central Life and Style, the Goop Press, GOOP Press. It's at Oscar, OSCAR, Serallach, SERRALLACH, two R's, two L's, owners.com. That's where you can find out more about it. Or the book's available on Amazon soon anyway, at least by June 5th, I think it comes out. Or came out June 5th. So Postnatal Depletion Cure by Dr. Oscar Sarawak. Thanks very much. And Ben, thanks for great engineering, and especially you who downloaded this podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you for downloading. Remember, the segment A's are the news of the week with what it means to you. That is the medical news, and especially what it means to you. And the B's are the guest segments, just like this one, that are so outstanding. Thanks again, Dr. Sarawak, and thank you.